Welcome to Christ Today. Heavenly Father, I pray for my words and all who hear my words today, that you guide and direct each of us to consider what is pertinent and what to do. In Jesus' name, amen. Last week I said I would speak a little bit about preparedness, and so I will. The first orientation must be your orientation to God through Jesus Christ and with the Holy Spirit. This is by knowing the Bible and biblical principles. Also, today I am going to talk about simple ideas which I hope will inspire you and give you enough thought and enough planning that you actually take some meaningful action steps to do things. Life so often is normal, and food and supplies are available now. And if you wait until everyone knows that there is some kind of big trouble just getting ready to pounce on us, then there will be hardly anything for you to get from the stores. So take some steps now. I talk about this subject so that you can identify your own concerns. And once those are identified, you can make decisions about how to act on them or not to act on them. Some concerns will be as basic as getting food only, or getting medical only, or getting money only. Things happen in life, and so you must ask yourself what steps you want to take. I mean, it could be as simple as a car accident that hits the electricity transformer in your neighborhood, and the electricity goes out. Or it could be a massive electricity thing like a solar mass ejection, which causes our entire nation's electricity to go off. For how long? Could be several years. So things do happen. Accidents do happen. I mean, it could be as simple as you're cutting vegetables and you slice your finger accidentally. Or you slip on one of those vegetables that you dropped while you were slicing them. And then what happens? Oh, you could break a tibia. That's the larger bone that is below your kneecap. And you can't guard against every possible concern, but you can always do something. There's lots of choices we have, but first we have to examine what our concerns are. And then you do something about them. But what's our orientation? Well, if you are around medical people, you would have an understanding of medical issues. And if you were hearing about stories about people who were starving from a lack of food and water, well, food and water would be your concern. If you had a family member who was unjustly persecuted or imprisoned, you would be concerned about justice. See, all these things just come to everybody in their own way, and it's a natural progression. Just like if you wanted a hamburger or some shoes or clothes, and if you couldn't get them, well, it might be that you wanted them for yourself or your children. So if you couldn't get them, you'd be more concerned about having the money to make your purchases. It's all just a little natural progression about what the things come into your life and what your needs and desires are. That's kind of the basics. It develops in a natural way. All these concerns are natural, and they get added to your common sense, the ideas that are just inside of you to develop your preparedness orientation. It's what everybody deals with. So as we see someone else going through a process of concerns or needs or shortcomings, well, we want to observe it and make sure that those difficulties don't happen to us or to our children. And so what do? We prepare. Sometimes we prepare a little, and sometimes we prepare a lot. It just depends on our life experiences. And life experiences, they probably include family history, cultural history, national history. All these things are in our background, and they make a difference as to what our view of the future is. But, you know, you look at the past. Most people don't look very far into the past today. If people are looking into the past, it's for a matter of a few days or a few months and occasionally a few years. It just doesn't seem to happen. We have a sort of near-sighted approach. In one way, that's good because it protects us from worrying about things, but it also leaves us vulnerable to some larger long-term concerns. But that's life. And everybody makes decisions, and everybody makes choices. And we each are responsible for our own choices. We are each responsible for living with the consequences of our choices. And these include both providing for yourself and for your own, and for loving your neighbor as you love yourself. That's the great commandment of the law, which is reflected in Jesus' commandment of John 15:12. So he said this was his commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. What a lot of concept there. So after that thought, my thoughts go to God's forgiveness. Which brings me to Matthew 6:15. If we do not forgive others their trespasses, neither will God forgive our trespasses. Yeah, so what is a trespass? It's when you go beyond your own area. Like if for instance you own some land and you go on to someone else's land, then you are trespassing on their land. So it could be a physical trespass or a moral trespass. It's just something where you don't have a authorization to be. So yeah, it's so easy for us to think of a physical boundary, but there's also a mental boundary or a moral boundary that is concerned in this position. So all these things we have to use our judgment for as we consider physical, moral, mental, and spiritual areas of judgment. And we should examine ourselves in this way. It's so much about our eternal destination. And for that, we have to remember, yes, go ahead and examine issues, but don't judge others about the eternal judgment. Because only God knows our thoughts and the intents of our heart. That's in Hebrews 4. So God only is qualified to make these determinations or judgments about the intent of our heart. We, human beings, we simply are not capable of having that kind of a judgment. But too often, we just seem to do it anyway. But we must guard ourselves to not do it. There's all sorts of decisions and discernments that we make as we go through life. That's the right thing to do. You use your discernment. You make choices in life, and you go certain directions. That's just so common. And then we get tossed about by circumstances. That's another one. And through it all, we each need God's grace. Oh, we sure do. So let us try to give God's grace what he gives to us to others. Yesterday I was thinking about grace and love, and biblical grace is God giving us favor more than we would ever deserve. And biblical love is an excited gratitude or happiness for the qualities or characteristics which we value or appreciate. Those were my thoughts. I had to dwell on that for a while. I know, but back to preparedness. That's what I wanted to talk about. I suggest that you examine preparedness, and a part of this preparedness is about preserving the things that are around you and for your use. And it's also about loving others, because that is a part of showing biblical compassion. We are to preserve ourselves, and we are to preserve others, so that the love of God can be shown to other people. And that will bring you to the saving grace of God through Jesus Christ. And then you want to be born again. That's kind of the process. Aren't we each called on to spread the good news of the Bible? Yes, we are. I think what I do is I think of each of us as being eternal beings, and we get to spend eternity in heaven or in hell. So let's learn how the Bible tells us how to get to heaven. And when we learn about this, we can act on it. We can learn from it, from the only man who has conquered death, and that is Jesus the Christ. So with this orientation, I hope we can consider our preparedness efforts, because spiritually, that is a key component of all our preparations. And this is reflected in early American history also. Speaking about American history, very few people have actually read the copies of the original writings of our founding fathers and of the men who came to America before them. Most of these people were highly concerned with spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ. And this truth about our Christian heritage is not really easy to discover, but it can be discovered if you look. And it just happens that only a few historians look beyond the general textbooks in history that are available. So if you look at our school system or at our university system, those writings are pretty hard to find. But the writings of the analysis of history, which are the history books we pretty much read today, now those are easy to find. And I can say this from my own experience with education. So throughout history and until these days, we have been subject to things of the earth, like the weather and the seasons, and they dictate what we have access to eat. This is the way it was 100 years ago, or 1,000 years ago, or before that. It's just the way it was. We lived based on our environment and our seasonal access to food. That's just the way it was. But now in our lifetime, all this has changed. We who hear this, we all live in a wonderful and luxurious situation compared to all the people who lived centuries before us. We can get food anytime we want. And any time of the year, we can get all sorts of foods, and it comes from every part of the world. What a blessing! Wow. In my life, I have seen and had so many blessings, I'm thankful for them. And in my life, I've had plenty of troubles too. Many a time I've heard someone say to me, "Wow, I've never heard of that happening before. I am a safety-oriented person, but surprises still happen, and my life has seen plenty of surprises. So based on this life experience of mine, I feel that we need to have a significant examination and concern with having just basic things like our food supply and to have it on hand because surprises happen and they're not always good. Yes, besides my own life experience, I'm a history guy, and I've seen lots of bad surprises happen in history. Lots of surprises of every sort happen. Yeah, they're good ones, but certainly they're bad ones too. So we want to look at how we can preserve the best of life experiences and prevent the worst of life experiences. That's kind of my answer to preparedness. So when you're doing the preparedness, I hope you don't overdo it. I don't think I do, but I do have basic supplies. And I like to see people have the basic supplies so that if you need to live, you'll have something to nourish you. About these items, everyone has different ideas of what anyone should have on hand. Not only the ideas about the basic supplies, but how much of each thing are certainly a question or a debate. For me, food is the item that I am most concerned with, and I do keep basic food items on hand, and I hope to never use them. Whole grains is most of what I have. I like whole grains because they last for decades, and they hold their nutrition because as a whole grain, they do. But if you turn it into a ground-up grain like flour, it doesn't hold its. It gets exposed to air and then doesn't hold its nutritional value. So besides grains, I also have oil, sugar, salt, and flavorings and vitamins. And I have a water filter, a manual wheat grinder, and a propane stove. And hand tools, but that's just normal for me to have. Normal things would be screws and nails and plywood. Flashlights, radios, and batteries. Like I said, that's kind of normal stuff. But with a little adjustment, you can change your normals into what works for a long-term concern. I guess one of the things there is a wheat grinder. You have to have a wheat grinder, and that does have to be a manual wheat grinder. So there's a few things that need a little adjustment. Maybe the amount of batteries you have on hand is one thing that is an adjustment. But basically, all the things that you have, you just change just a little bit, and they work just fine for both normal use and the just-in-case situation. You do have to determine what your food items are and what their quantity will be. That's kind of the basics of it. For the propane stove, you might or might not have one. Same for the propane. The water filter, now there's another idea that is not so usual, but it is so very important. In my view, it's essential. A water treatment is another way to say it. And you have to remember that the water is an essential item. So if you think about the food, you can start with anything. You don't have to have the great big program and figure out that you need 300 pounds of anything. You can start anywhere. Just think of what $25 will do. It could probably get you 25 pounds of white rice, 5 pounds of sugar, and 5 gallons of water. And you know what? Most people can afford this, and that is a step. We all have to start somewhere, and this might be your beginning. $25, it'll get you approximately 25 pounds of white rice, 5 pounds of sugar and 5 gallons of bottled water. You do want white rice. The brown rice is healthier, but it doesn't store well. So, for the future, we can only wonder what will happen. And truly, we don't know what to prepare for. But if you look back in history, you can see that surprises happen. Anything can happen. There may be rain or floods or volcanoes or earthquakes or a tsunami. Fires happen all the time. You see, in some areas, in some far-off countries, we have also seen economic crises or riots or food being scarce or other supplies being very hard to find. That's what history shows us. History has also shown us huge epidemics, from typhoid to the Black Plague. And if an epidemic were to occur today, I can only guess how many people would stay home and not go to work. And I think it would be nice that they would like to have some food supplies to eat in their home. So just take some figuring out. And it's a good idea to figure it out. See, anything could happen. It's anyone's guess what really could happen, and there's surprises because we don't know. But we still do have indicators of the things that might happen, and we get indicators that there's surprises. Historical indicators, for instance, show that we are overdue for an earthquake. There's a number of earthquake faults. And they have typically are overdue for a release. So there's the Midwestern or Missouri New Madrid Fault. That's one. And on the West Coast, there's the Cascadia Subduction Zone. And that runs from Northern California to Southern Canada. And there's the Southern San Andreas Fault and the Hayward Fault. See, these are all things that are just ready to go any time. So these are reasons to have supplies. There's also the Yellowstone caldera volcano. If that goes off, well, it could change our world. The global cooling it would cause famine, and the Smithsonian Channel said that it could last for 5, 6, 7 years. A 7-year famine kind of makes you think, doesn't it? It's a long famine, but we've had that happen before. So the answer to this is that it could happen any time because it is overdue. I think that another thing to look at, and this is what so many Christian people do, is they look at what does the Bible say, and that's right. So it says, before Christ returns, this is described in Matthew chapter 4, Mark chapter 13, and Luke chapter 21. It says, before he comes again, there will be troubles, like earthquakes, famine, and war. So, yeah, I think making preparations only makes sense. There will be coming troubles, but as I talk to people about emergency preparations, I'm surprised that 80% of the people, they think it's a good idea, but then 80% have done nothing to prepare. Nothing. And they don't have anything to help them get through a great difficulty or an electrical outage or some kind of a life-changing natural disaster. It's my estimation that only 20% have supplies for a few months. And of those, I think there's probably 6%, well, total of 6% that have notable preparations. It's just a question. Where do you want to be in that example? Do you want to be the prepared people or the people who have nothing? I think it's pretty interesting to to look at what's coming. We don't know when, but we know because the Bible says famine is coming, and that, I think, is reasonable to prepare for. The Bible also says, be not deceived. It also says, fear not. All those things are things for us to remember. But it's also to remember food is essential to life. And when you consider what foods you have on hand, remember to count the calories. Calories are important. And yes, of course, a well-balanced diet is good, but if food is in short supply, it is the calories which are most beneficial. I know it's a hard concept to grasp, especially today when people are eating way too many calories and getting fat. But if there is a food shortage, then we will crave the foods that have a lot of calories, like oil, sugar, and fat, and starches. It's just the way it works. So store your food with those things in mind. Storage conditions are always a concern. As well as you can, you want to store your food in a cool, dry place. And if you're storage location is warm, then store your food anyway, because it's food. And maybe it's grains then for what you should store. But the basics are grains, sugar, salt, oil. And oil, in my experience, has lasted a few years. I've had oil that was 10 years old, and it still was completely fine. I can't say that I recommend doing that, but it's my experience that oil was just fine after 10 years. I do prefer olive oil also, but you get what makes sense to you and what you're used to. All these things last longer than we would think unless they're processed foods. But you have to look into this. Oh, and do pay attention to what the manufacturers say. They do have a lot to say that's good. And back to grains. Remember to have various grains and various legumes. There's a lot of various beans and, for instance, lentils or chickpeas. When you combine them with rice, they make a complete protein, and that's always good to remember. Pasta is good to have on hand, and pasta lasts for years and years. I've heard it said 20 years. Probably true if it doesn't get wet. But there's all sorts of things to consider, and it takes an examination for you to take the steps you need. For sweets, you would want to have a couple of them on hand, like white sugar and brown sugar and honey and molasses, because every one of those has a little different taste. For your greens, I suggest having enough wheat to sprout, and bean sprouts are also very good. So that you can do inside. Sprout your wheat and your beans. In the warm weather, you can garden outside, and that's a good thing to do. But a garden can regularly, or let's say quickly, be eaten down by some kind of an animal or a bird, or a flock of birds. So you have to watch it, and you have to harvest it before it is ripe. That's just typical. And meat is a good idea, and pretty much what we do is we get canned meats. That's important to have, too. It has a nice change of flavor, and if you have too much canned meat, you get tired of it pretty quick. So just use it sparingly. I think that's, for me, that's the same way as it is with spices, except for salt and pepper. Have lots of salt and pepper, because that's good. Vanilla is also good. And whatever spices you're used to, have that on hand. All of it is good for plain foods. You just add it to whatever foods you're having. Just plain old white rice is good. And if you add a few dehydrated carrots or a few dehydrated peas, well, really to any dish, it just makes a nice variation. You will like it. And also dehydrated onions. When you do without your normal flavors, all these little bits of flavors taste really good. So that's why there's a big advantage to having those relatively inexpensive dehydrated vegetables. And they do last for years and years. You just want to be sure you don't contaminate your source in the container. They pretty much come in number 10 tin cans, and you just dish them out. But make sure you don't contaminate the remaining food in that can. You never use your fingers, and you never would use a utensil or anything that would contaminate it. Just take care of the food you have. Sometimes you will want a simple broth or some other vegetables, dehydrated vegetables or spices. Everything like that helps a plain meal a whole lot. You will just be using a little of any of the spices because you will want to conserve your supplies, and your taste buds will adjust because you won't be used to having less flavorful meals, but your taste buds do adjust. It's just not immediately. Remember your vitamins. Multivitamins are good. It's just a good idea. You'll need something to put all of your food supplies into, and I think that a couple of metal 55-gallon drums is the most convenient way to do it. Store your food in them. Sure, put them in a plastic bag. Put them in a Mylar bag if you want. The difference between Mylar and plastic is plastic bags have very, very little movement in them of air. But they're not completely sealed. Mylar is completely sealed. It's just the movement of air. But that's the difference. You will want to have salt, of course, and for the salt, you won't put that in the metal drum. You'll put that in a 5-gallon plastic pail, or maybe you'll put it in a 1-gallon Ziploc. That 1 pound of salt in a 1-gallon Ziploc, that works really good. It's just you get to figure out how to do it. If you buy the salt, get iodized salt because it's about the most common source of iodine we have. And I do suggest also that you use cast iron pots and pans because people need both iodine and iron for our diet. If there is a grid collapse or some kind of a collapse, sugar and salt will become exceedingly valuable and tradable. Salt and sugar are, well, we're just so used to it that it's very important, and we use these for preserving food as well. In the colonial days, those were also very valuable. Anytime, they were a very tradable commodity. Remember also that water is more important than food. You will need a few ways to clean your water. It's always easier to store your water now than it is to think about carrying water from another source later. So have some water stored, and then be able to treat the water that you do happen to get from someplace else. That's in case the grid goes down and our water stops being pumped. It's a real possibility in that situation. Treating water is really a pretty big study. You can look at it simply, and it can be looked at simply, just by getting a water filter or adding a couple of drops of bleach, like 8 to a gallon, or by using a ultraviolet light. All these things cleanse the water one way or another. boiling for a couple of minutes is good too. But they all do it a little bit different, and they all have a little bit different effect on what you're trying to accomplish by cleaning your water. So it takes a little study, even though the simple answers are simple and they're good, but they're not the whole answer if you have complications. For the water, I also like to have a little bit of flavoring in each water, like some kind of an unsweetened powdered beverage works good. And just a touch of root beer works really good too. Now remember, you're not making a beverage, you're only using a very little bit to make your water taste better. You'll want to get some flavorings that will last a long, long time and use them sparingly because you don't know how long you're going to need them. For drinking a little bit of water, like when you're traveling, certainly you can always use a canteen, and you can treat that water with tablets, or sometimes the canteens have an integral water filter. It's all good. They're all good. And water is essential, so you'll have to learn how to treat it and how to make the water taste good after it's treated. All these things are so very essential. Another thing that's pretty essential is first aid. Now, unless you have a doctor type of a skills, you are pretty much just going to be doing anything basic. Basic first aid. And that's all that probably 98% of any of us will ever need anyway. And that mostly means that you are dealing with various skin and maybe muscle injuries. Probably. It's mostly cuts and bites, possibly a puncture wound, and possibly a burn. So you absolutely have to have some items, like lots and lots of triple antibiotic ointment. That helps promote healing, and it also helps to greatly reduce infection. You will want lots of 2x2 medical pads or any size medical pads. And you will want lots and lots of 1-inch medical tape. These are must-have items. There's lots of other things that you can get, like pain relief is good, or pain or fever reducer, or a good set of needle-nose tweezers is good. And everyone should have quite a bit of antidiarrheal pills, because when you need them, you need them. Also, burn relief is one thing you should have. Some people like hydrogen peroxide for wounds, and that's good too. It seems to lose its efficiency after a few years, but all these things are good, but you do need some basic supplies and lots of them. Another thing that you will need is a good first aid book. So when you're thinking about first aid in a grid-down situation, then you will want an advanced first aid book, one that is intended for probably wilderness first aid, because most of the first aid books tell you that if there's this problem or that, go to a doctor or the hospital. But if no doctor is immediately available, you want to have an idea of what you can do. And that's the situation that the wilderness first aid books deal with. So you should have at least one medical book, because they seem to take approaches to different medical problems differently. So have at least one, probably two or three. And of course, now don't forget this one, you will want to be in close contact with that great physician, and that is God, because He heals, He does miracles. And there's many things that have happened in the past where Christians have prayed and people have been healed. So if you listen to stories, you will hear plenty of stories where God has healed an amazing number of people from an amazing number of situations. God is active in our world today. He has healed many, many people supernaturally and through prayer. It's just the way it is. There's also been many people in many nations who have had Jesus Christ visit them supernaturally. It's just amazing. Sometimes it was while they were being persecuted, and sometimes it is while they were simply and truly seeking God. And then they're visited by the one true God, Jesus. And he has visited many people of many religions, not just Christians, not just Jews, but Muslims, Buddhists, and others. That when they are visited by Jesus, they are converted to be a Christ follower. And the feeling is so thrilling and exciting to them about what has happened to them that they seem to tell everybody. And then when the rulers of that other religion that they were in hear about it, well, sometimes that new believer is put into persecution, or sometimes they escape persecution. And sometimes they die a martyr's death. And what a testimony is that, that they are willing to die. So, God does wonders in our world, and that's a part, reaching people. And healing people, that's another part. Now, I've even heard of adults who have prayed and received new teeth. Or a new tooth, both. So I just have to think it's a miraculous event, a miracle. Well, for a lot of people, teeth are a major concern. And I think the best answer really is just going to a dentist and trying to figure out what to do with the dentist. I did know one old guy who would never go to a dentist. I think he went once when he was 20, and he would never go back. He died about when he was 75, and his teeth looked awful, but it was something. He would never go to a dentist, and he never did. I also know a lady who got a toothache, and at the time she was about 60, she wiggled it, and finally after about a little over 2 months, the tooth came out, and that was 2 months, though. Not an easy solution, but she did get the tooth out, and that's what I mean to tell you. Because teeth can be a big problem. So we want to take care of them with good dental hygiene. I think that's the best answer. Keep your teeth for a lifetime and avoid sugar. Brush them. Floss them. Yeah, and also take good care of your eyes and your ears. Using safety goggles and hearing protection is simply a smart thing to do. So keep that in mind, too. Cell phones. I don't know what to say about cell phones and microwave communications or G5 phone networks. These are things that, well, they say they cause tumors or cancers in rats. What do they do for people? I'm not sure. But there's all sorts of other concerns that we have in life. That could be one of them. Vaccines could be another one. There are various studies that show direct connections between autism and vaccines. They're pretty good studies that also show that fluoride is bad for people. When we drink water, we get fluoride. And it has been shown that there is a 3 to 7 point loss in IQ among teenagers and preteens. Some people even say that there's some kind of a loss in people in the teen years. It's just an unknown thing, but there are truly questions about it. Fluoride. It's something that's in all of our drinking water, And I can't help but think back to fluoride that has been put into the water of gulags and prisons to keep those prisoners docile. And that has been for about the last 100 years that has been a known method of making people docile. Huh, are we docile? Ha! Maybe. But anyway, it's one of those questions. How do we deal with things? How do we deal with vaccines? Vaccines! Yeah, California children are all required to take them. And by the time they graduate from high school, it's 50-some vaccinations, not separately, but together, that they have been exposed to. I know there's people who say they have been grown on mediums which have come from aborted baby organs. Yeah, that's what I've come to find too. They simply keep those cells alive and multiplying from those original aborted babies, the organs of them. But what it really is, how much of it, good question. I don't know, but there is something at its core that seems wrong, morally wrong, to inject one person with another person's cells. So I don't know where our informed consent went, because nobody seems to know about this. And speaking about informed consent and shots, what about flu shots? You know, just about all the flu shots contain thimerosal. Thimerosal is a preservative which sometimes those vaccination companies say that it is required, it is necessary. But thimerosal is 49% mercury. Wow! Mercury! Have you ever heard that it is okay to put just a little bit of mercury into your blood? I haven't. All I've heard is how dangerous mercury is. And so flu shots, they don't sound so good to me. Well, in general, you have to look at both sides of the arguments, whatever they are, and if you only ask certain people, you only get certain knowledge. Like the schools only know one thing. The doctors, almost all of them, only have exposure to one side of an argument. They don't really have exposure. They don't have time to look at any other discussion between another point of view and what they have learned. So I think it's important to listen to both sides of an argument and make an educated decision. Yeah. And maybe you are comfortable with allowing your senator or your assemblyman or your congressman to make health decisions for you. Maybe you trust them that much to make decisions for you, for your children and your grandchildren. They make decisions, and they have mandated required programs for so many people in so many situations. It might be too late for us to make changes to all sorts of situations, but only you can make that decision. You'll have to figure it out. Put some effort into it and decide. I do urge you to examine that issue, though, all those issues. Otherwise, things will simply continue just as they have been, and we all will be in the same position we are now, only more of it. So give this some consideration. Just figure it out if you possibly can. You have to be strong enough to do your own research. And don't forget, then you have to stand up and say something about you, about your children or grandchildren. It's all something. But somehow you have to study it. You have to read up on it. And then you have to see if it's something you want to do anything about. There are all sorts of challenges we have in front of us. How do we examine any of them? Well, I think we seek understanding. We try to look at it through a belief system. We change that which does not conform to our belief. And then we try not to be deceived. That's kind of the system or steps that I see as we examine what is in front of us. There's so many people who stand up and say, believe like I do, believe like I do, but we never examine it critically, and I think we should. I think it's a good idea to pray to God for discernment and ask the Holy Spirit of God to give us that discernment. Yes, lots of reasons to have it. Discernment can help us to recognize the spiritual dangers around us. Dr. Stanley Monteith, and he used to say that we are in a spiritual battle taking place on a physical, political, cultural, and an economic playing field. I think I got that right. But that's the idea here. We are in a battle, so just consider that we want to come out in a good way out of this battle. We have all sorts of things that are affecting us these days. There are high-tech things that confront us, middle-tech ideas and low-tech ideas. But it's the low-tech that seems to get our attention because we know how to deal with low technology. We know what the fundamental and basic concerns are. That we know, they're plain. Water, food, heat, and shelter. Protection from the cold and the winter elements. Yeah, we think of these things, and we also have to consider that if these things are the problem, we're not going to get any help. The government won't help us, and very few neighbors will be able to help either. And if they do help, it's a little bit. We should help our neighbors, but it's just that most people don't have those preparations in place where they can provide much assistance. I do think communities are a very important part of having our own interactions and assistance one from each another. We do have to be aware. Awareness helps with all things. Be aware of what's going on around you. Be aware of all these things, physically and politically. Your surroundings are important to keep an eye on. If we get to the middle technology, we have other problems, and that might be just about the decline of our country or the steady downward path that our economy is going. That's kind of middle technology. High technology would be all these things that are going on with cameras and identifying each one of us and tracking our whereabouts. I have to say that even the smartphones do this. They listen to our conversations, and they present us with advertising about things that we just talked about. Haven't you noticed how interesting that is? And then there's Amazon, Google, and Facebook. They all both use and sell access to your face through facial recognition. Wherever you are, they track you. And they sell this tracking information, whatever it is. I heard one report that said they sell it for 10 cents a minute. I don't know that I can say that. One source is not enough, but it just made me think. Reports are all over the place of how certain populations, certain countries have been tracking people for years. And that's so easy to do now with the technology that's available. The government has spent lots and lots and lots of money on their programs to do this. I can only wonder why. Why do we spend so much money on identifying each person and tracking them? You just have to wonder. I don't mean I have the answers, but yeah. The range of possibilities are all over the place, and I don't know where to take it. Yes, think about it, don't worry about it, but just do give it thought. To me, I go back to the preparations, because preparations just make sense for short-range or long-range possibilities, high-tech concerns or low-tech concerns. All these things are potentially interrupting what our lives are about, what we're doing, and what we want to do. Just so many questions. Look, Look, I think about what would happen if we had our electricity go out. Then we would be living in a low-tech world. Just think, can you imagine going back to an 1800s style of living? It would be silent all the day long, and the nights would be dark all the night long. It's just too hard to imagine. Just think, we would have time for conversations with God, and we would have time for human relationships, and for thinking about things and contemplating who knows what. Yikes! Is that scary or what? Or is it a pleasure to think about all that contemplation and communication? Oh, yeah, interesting thought. So, they're just real things. Real things is what possibly could happen. Would it happen? Who knows? But I think a little preparation for all sorts of things are good. If it's that low-tech situation, then we will need to get our axe and our hoe and our sickle and our knife sharpeners out. And we will go back to planting, harvesting, and grinding our own wheat and other grains. Doesn't sound like much fun, does it? No! What would I do? I guess I could teach. Do I have enough skill to control money and products like a merchant would? I don't know. Preaching? I don't know. They don't seem to earn much living, but they do get by. What would a person do? What would you do? What abilities could you trade for what you need? Good question. And it reminds me of how many people have said, if that happens, I'll just die. Yeah, some people see it that way. And another point of view is, if that happens, I'm going to be strong and survive. And there's the third point of view, which is, my God created me for this time and this place, and I will do the best that I can to please him. Yep. So I think that's a good point of view to consider, too. What do you think might be worthwhile to do? I think that you ought to keep your ideas about heaven for yourself and for others, because that is really an important part of life. It's not just heaven, but it's pleasing God and giving thanks to your Creator. That's what so much of this is about. So change as best you can to be pleasing to God and fit right into heaven when it's the right time, because that's what we want to conform our lives to, the image of Christ, so that we can fit into his world. Yeah! So those are the things that I think are valuable to think about. Sure, we can think about food. Sure, we can think about freedom. Sure, we can think of the problems that are going on in the world. Divide and conquer is all over the place. That is an ancient philosophy, and it is going down all over the place today. Divide and conquer. It's happening. And we have to be aware and hold fast to the principle and the love of Jesus Christ. Get along. Use wisdom. Use prayer. All these things are important. Use the biblical examples that we have. Read the Bible. Learn the Bible. It's a good way to be. It shows wise, loving of people. It shows a lot of things, but I guess you have to read it to see, to get the full understanding of what it is. And be careful to stay in God's will for all these things. Remember that we live in a world where there's natural cycles. We want to recognize the times, and we want to thrive in the times. I can't help but think of Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, that describe famine, earthquakes, and war that will occur before Jesus' second coming. And I think that that's a good thing to be examining so we can do his will here on earth. Heaven is beautiful. Let's get there. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. You can listen again on www.christtoday.org. And you can contact me at John Stephenson, P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. And you can get my preparedness pamphlet. So thank you so much, and until next week, may you walk with God, and may God walk with you.